scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get things going. Hey, happy Friday, friends. It is Friday, December 20th. We've got this hour of Flames Talk underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. How we doing, AV?
I'm a little squirmy. I'm trying to get comfortable over here. It's not working so well.
Well, happy Friday nonetheless.
Thank
it's
you.
It's our final regular Flames Talk edition before Christmas. Flames Talk will take a little hiatus until, I believe, December 27th. We have a postgame for you on Saturday for the Flames and Blackhawks, then on hiatus for the longest Christmas break in the history of the Calgary Flames. Nobody is complaining about that. Hopefully, everybody has a nice Christmas on tap and ahead. We've got lots to get to this hour on Flames Talk, including the Daily Flames Roundtable, reacting to last night's 3-2 overtime loss against the Ottawa Senators as the Flames drop to 1-1-2 on this five-game homestand that wraps up Saturday afternoon against the Blackhawks. But another couple points from Matt Coronato on Thursday night. So 3-2 in overtime. That's your final score. Coronato comes away with a couple of points, though. And yeah, both assists. Doesn't score, but gets a couple of assists. He's now up to 8 goals, 16 points in 28 games this season. Second professional season, and I would suggest not too shabby at all for a guy in his second pro season and his longest stint in the NHL to this point. And I know earlier this week on the Big Show with the Boys, Eric Francis, who goes on every week with them, talked about Matt Coronato and said his belief is that it will be Matt leading the Flames in goals at the end of the season. Right now he's got 8. He's 4 off the team lead with Huberdeau and Kadri, each with 12 goals on the season. And I get asked all the time, whether it's on the postgame show, on the phone lines, on the text line, I get asked all the time about the ceiling for Matt Coronato as well. I'd be curious as to where you are on this. And usually what I say is, like, without limiting him, I think we're talking about a guy that when he gets into the groove of his NHL career, we're talking about somebody who can score 20, 25 goals on a yearly basis, kind of an annual 20 to 25 goal guy, and a guy who can flirt with 30 to 35 every, you know, once in a while, you know, every few seasons or when it's all said and done. Few times in his career, he goes over the 30 goal mark. That's what I've said when I've been asked that question, and I hate answering it because you always do. Whether you mean to or not, you do limit a player when you say those things. But that's kind of what I think is a realistic and attainable ceiling for a guy like Matt Coronato. I'm curious as to where you are with him.
I don't doubt whatsoever that he is at least once going to score 30 goals in the NHL. And I agree in your assessment. To me, I think he's a 25, 25, 50 guy when he's in the sort of peak of his career. Again, like I said, I do think he's going to be a 30 goal scorer at some point. I don't think he's going to be a year in, year out set and forget 30. So when he's not hitting that mark, hitting that plateau, I think a 25, 25, 50 is sort of what my expectation is. But at the same time, he's in his first full NHL season and he's on pace for 22. He's on pace for 22 goals, 77 games. Like his line right now projects out, if he continues the pace he's at, 22, 22 for 44. So me sitting here going, well, I think when he's consistent and running through his career in years, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the NHL, he's going to be 25, 25, 50. If he doesn't hit a skid, a slump, even if he gets hot, he'll jump these numbers. But he's already knocking in that neighborhood of what I think his potential is. And the fact that he's only in his second pro season, as you mentioned, the fact that he just turned 22 in November last month. One month ago, he was a 21-year-old. I don't know if I'm necessarily selling him short in that. I've always kind of held the opinion going back to his draft year, before he was property of the Flames, he was a guy that was going to be a first round pick, and he was, but he was going to kind of be that 25 goal, 50 point guy. He played 34 last year, but that wasn't a full season in the NHL. He's definitely playing a full season this year. There's not a chance in the world that he is going to spend any more time than he already has with the Wranglers, at least in my opinion. And he's at 22 for 44. So I don't know if potentially I've been selling him short this whole time if he's peaking early.
Let me play you this because, so yeah, in my mind, kind of on a yearly basis, kind of say 20 to 25 goals, 25 to 35 assists. So, you know, in the 55 to 65 point range per year is kind of what I felt with, you know, a few years where it's higher than that. Well, listen to this. This is head coach Ryan Huska. Every Flames pregame show, our Flames warm-up pregame show, he chats with Megan Mickelson for 3-4 minutes on the coach's show. And, you know, Mick goes all over the place with them. And so for the game on Saturday, this is for Saturday's game because there won't be a morning skate Saturday. So a lot of the pregame stuff was done after practice on Friday. Listen to this. When the question Mick asked was, hey, Matt Coronato, 2 more points. He's playing some good hockey, finding a nice kind of role on the right side of Coleman and Backlund. What are the next steps for Matt Coronato? And this is how head coach Ryan Huska answered it on the coach's show.
He's going to continue to produce. I think you're going to see him, in my opinion, eventually he's going to be a point-a-game guy. And we'll look for him to be kind of our scoring threat as we get moving forward. That's a lot to put on a young guy right now, but I do think down the road he's more than capable of it. What I really like about his game is his commitment away from the puck, and I feel that's why he's getting the opportunities to shoot the puck, to be involved in the offensive side of the game. And I think because he's played a lot over the last little while, he's on a line that's on the ice fairly regularly, the confidence with the puck has gone up. So he's shown a lot of composure and calmness, I guess I would say, with the puck. And he's made some really good plays over the last little while. So we want him to keep taking steps. That's the biggest thing for him, is keep improving and getting better every day.
It's funny, you hadn't heard that clip.
And nope.
I saw your eyes as soon as your eyes were the exact same as mine when I heard him say that. I was like, whoa, did he just say
pressure, kid.
Point per game? And again, I don't think that he's trying to put pressure on. Of course
he's not pumping tires.
No. I think that's just an indication as to what the head coach thinks of the player and the way that he's working, the skill set that he possesses, and the progression that we've seen from him, the development that we've seen from him since the beginning of last year. And, you know, there's always been this feeling that, you know, maybe the head coach isn't a big fan. I don't want to say there's always been this feeling, but there have been some who have wondered on post-game shows based on how he was used last season or how he was used to start this season. Like, does the coach not like Matt Coronato? Well, I think you just heard in that clip that there couldn't be anything further from the truth. That's a coach who's a big fan of the work ethic. That's a coach who is a massive fan of the commitment and what we're seeing from Matt in terms of how he's really committing himself to try to be a better all-round player. And then he says, I think he can be a point-per-game player in this league. So maybe we are underselling what Matt Coronato's got. When you hear an NHL head coach who sees him closer than any of us do on a daily basis, oof. That's some high praise from the head coach.
Well, and if you run through the hockey DB of Matt Coronato, he was a point-per-game player with the Wranglers last season. He was a point-per-game player the year before with Harvard. And 2 years prior to that, when he was with the Chicago Steel in the United States Hockey League, he had 85 and 51 and 40 and 45 even the season before that. So everywhere he's gone, he has been a point-per-game player. And I do think that is a lot of praise to heap upon a 22-year-old, but I could understand where Huska's coming from because, and you said the word work ethic. There's 3 divining traits for Matt Coronato from my perspective, my vantage point when I see him play. It's work ethic, it's intelligence, and it's that shot. And when you combine those 3 things, yeah, you have the opportunity to develop into a very productive forward at the highest level of hockey in the world, the NHL. And again, like as we were talking before you played that clip, I'm like, well, maybe I've sold him short at 25-25 since he's already projected to be 22-22 in his first full season in the NHL. So clearly the head coach believes that there's plenty more room for growth off that pace.
Yeah, I think that was quite quite telling as to how impressed the coaches point per game that for the way he plays, like, yeah, that's more than 30 goals. You're probably talking about 35 goals and another 45, 50 assists. And right now he's 8-8 through 26. More ice time he gets, and he's getting lots of ice time right now playing with Backlund and Coleman. At some point, if he's put on more of an offensive line, obviously, I think, like, the way that, for instance, the Huberto-Kadri line is being used right now, being fed offensive zone starts, same with the Zary line. You put him in a situation like that down the road, I'm definitely intrigued that the coach has that high of an opinion on him. And again, I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, well, coach says he's going to be a point per game player. Well, now that's not what I'm trying to say. That's more of an illustration of just, hey, the organization is really happy about the way this guy has progressed. And the organization is really happy about the way that he has dug in and made himself a full-time NHLer. Because maybe the thing that is most impressive to me, or the thing that stands out to me, is that it wasn't that long ago that you and I were sitting here having conversations about, can Matt Coronato be a fourth liner in the, like, can he be an effective fourth liner in the NHL?
Or is that where you'd start him?
If there's, like, is there room for him in this lineup? How does Matt Coronato get into the lineup? And remember all the consternation when he got sent down to the American League for a week and how mad people were about that. And how can they be doing this? He's going to request a trade. And the messaging from the Flames was, whoa, they stole it right from Nazem Kadri. Like, pump the brakes here. Like, just, and then next thing you know, Anthony Mantha tears his ACL and he's done for the season. And these things happen. This is, there's never a linear blueprint in terms of a way a guy's going to work his way into being a full-time NHLer. There never is. And in this case, it was a season-ending injury that opened the door for Matt Coronato, and you've got to be ready for when opportunity knocks. And that was one of the main messages that they gave to Matt Coronato coming into this year, is we don't know if you're going to be on the roster to start the year. We don't know if there's going to be a ready, tailor-made spot for you on October 10th. But be ready, and when the opportunity comes, not if, we don't know how, but it will come when it comes, be ready for it. And I give all the credit in the world to him for being ready for it and then not resting on his laurels and still working his tail off to get more and more ice time and opportunity at the NHL level.
Yeah, and important to note, it was inevitable that he would be back up. It was a Mantha injury that opened the door for him. He only ended up playing two games in the American Hockey League, had two goals, by the way. But this was something that, it wasn't Matt Coronato being demoted because of poor play or poor attitude or anything like that. It was, hey, we're jammed up right now. We want you to go down and play some top minutes, and your opportunity is going to come. Now, again, it came rather quickly, but credit to him for seizing it. Credit to Ryan Huska, too, because very rarely do you have an NHL head coach. And again, I don't even want to call it a tire pump, because that's just Ryan Huska expressing what he thinks and what he feels and what he believes in when he sees Matt Coronato. How many times have we heard an NHL coach go, well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves with a youngster? But truly, Ryan Huska believes that Matt Coronato has the potential to be a point per game player. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said it. You don't say it without belief. That's not something you just toss out there for fun and let two idiots on a Friday afternoon
stew over it a little bit.
But good on him for being honest about what he sees in the player, because there's been so many coaches, whether it's a rookie or a sophomore or a prospect in development camp or a rookie tournament, kind of downplay the impact of what a youngster might be able to do.
Yep.
Whereas Husk right there goes, Matt Coronato can be a point-per-game player in the NHL. And again, that's not something you just toss out there for fun. You have to believe it, and there's no doubt in my mind Ryan Huska believes it. That's the potential. That's the upside in Coronato.
Few texts at 960-960 on this one. This is from Phil and Cochrane. Apparently, like, 80% of our listenership is from Cochrane. I mean, Shan...
Well, when you have Wes Gilbertson on the program...
Wes Gilbertson, Cochrane. The Flames Talk fam is half Cochrane. You've got Shan, Cam... Wes, Cochran, you Grand Prairie, me Calgary, Francis, Toronto?
East.
Yeah, east. Wherever he's from. That's kind of like
he's from cottage country.
Yeah. Yes, he is. It's a cabin, Francis, not a cottage. Come on, you've been here for like 30 years. This says, guys, Coronado's on pace for 22-22 on a team that only averages below 3 goals a game. I think that projects higher once the team elevates their scoring. That comes from Phil and Cochran.
Good point.
I think it's a fair point. Because this team is not going to be a team that averages less than 3 goals per game in perpetuity.
You hope?
Well, I mean, I think that's probably fair to say. You know, they are currently sitting... And this with a little bit more goal scoring of late. They're sitting 26th in the NHL at 2.61 goals per game. The Tampa Bay Lightning lead the NHL at 4 goals per game, which is just...
You could get Coronado on Tampa. I'm not advocating a trade.
But, you know, when the Flames get to where they hope to be and when a new building opens, if they're, you know, fighting to be a perennial Pacific Division playoff team, then, yeah, they're probably averaging somewhere... middle of the pack in the NHL, which is at least 3 goals per game. You've got 18 of the 32 teams averaging more than 3 goals per game right now. So an uptick in offense from the group, I think, helps Matt Coronado too. I think that's a very good point. This reads from Stafford in Hillhurst. Pat, I think Matt's productivity will be dictated by who he plays beside to enhance his skill set. That shot of his can be deadly. And that's going to be really interesting, too, because right now I think he is getting invaluable experience in development playing with Backlund and Coleman. Like, what a great duo to have beside you, elevating you and driving things in your first full NHL season, right? But down the road, you know, people are clamoring for Coronado and Zeri on a line. I see it every day that
I believe you tweet
the lines. And maybe, like, right now... maybe it doesn't have to happen. Second half of the season, next season, why not? And now all of a sudden, Zeri, who is a very dynamic puck carrier, is very good with the puck on his stick, dynamic with it, is able to create things. He distributes the puck well, and I think his vision for distribution is going to get only better as he gets more and more comfortable at the NHL level. Like, yes. That I think is something that could be a really nice fit down the road and more offensive time as he becomes a more well-rounded player. I do think his productivity goes up even more in a more offensive role. And then if you find a good fit for him, which I think there are some good fits on the roster.
With that, I do think, from my perspective anyway, I'm fine leaving him for the time being with Backlund and Coleman.
Agreed.
Because there's no better developmental spot on the team than playing the right side with Backlund down the middle and Coleman on your other wing.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Flames Talk's underway. It is a Friday. Happy holidays. We're underway. Vickers and Steinberg from our Groundworks downtown studio. What do we, just quickly, we don't have to spend a ton of time on this unless the text line wants us to. What do we make of the overtime non-calls and the fallout afterwards?
I mean, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer here. Did Jonathan Huberdeau get high-sticked in the face? Absolutely. Did they miss a call? Absolutely. And now it's just building frustration from a game and a series of games where the Flames haven't gotten many calls. At the same time, I didn't love Huberdeau just being down on the ice, barking at the ref while the two-on-one's going the other way. Yes, they did miss a call, though.
I think that was a carryover from the frustration of earlier.
Well, Pospisil gets a...
It was that. I mean, the Pospisil, like, I still don't know what Pinto was so mad about. Like, was it just...
Well, there's a little bit of a... In all fairness, there's a little bit of a headlock.
But I mean...
But basically a sucker punch with a glove on.
That's what I was... I was like...
Well, and then you go back
excuse
and...
Excuse me?
How many power plays have the Flames had in the two games prior?
Well, they had no power plays against Tampa. I think they had
one,
two against Florida, and then none against Boston. They had two on Thursday against Ottawa. The one, the Pospisil popped to the head, especially knowing his concussion history and that type of stuff.
In fairness to Pinto, I'm sure he doesn't know that, but I can understand why the Flames and the teammates would be sensitive to it. You should never just punch somebody in the face. Don't get me wrong.
They were upset that it didn't get called and that it got missed. And then in overtime, another one gets missed. They felt was pretty egregious.
Well, and that one, I can even understand missing the Pospisil one because even a lot of Flames players even admitted they didn't see it in real time. But Huberto was driving to the net on a scoring chance when there's only five other guys on the ice. And he's got the puck on his stick in what could have been a game-winning scenario. And to miss that, I can understand why that's a little tough.
I do think it was a clear missed call. I'm not sure if they just missed it or if they decided not to call it, like on a discretionary call. Like, well, his stick wasn't that high. Like, I honestly don't know. But I don't criticize Huberto. Like, Huberto went hard into the boards.
I was more worried that Huberto broke his arm
I thought he was hurt. Like, I'm not criticizing him for not getting back into the play.
Well, it wasn't that, but to me, it was just... There's too much time spent with the official as opposed to...
Well, but the puck had already gone in. Like, there was no way. It was just a bad sequence because he got tripped and high-sticked, went hard into the boards, led to a two-on-one the other way, and the game was over. Like, Huberto had no chance to get back.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting he was going to be able to get back and break up a two-on-one.
Kadri had no chance to get back into the play because it had already gone the other way because good on Ullmark. He recognized the situation up past the Stützle, and next thing you know, it's the overtime winner. It was a missed call, and I understood the frustration. They happen. Enough of the, like, there was a little bit too much, in my opinion, there's a little bit too much hyperbole on our text line on Thursday night. Like, the whole, you know, Murray Edwards needs to take NHL officiating to court. I was like, okay, it was a missed call. You know, the best part, what I thought was the best part about the reaction was that to a man, we heard from Blake Coleman, we heard from Jonathan Huberto, we heard from Mackenzie Weegar and Ryan Huska, all post-game. Connor Zeri joined us on our post-game show, and everybody took a high road. Like, they did, they told us what they thought about it, but they weren't, like, they were like, yeah, that we don't like that. That was a missed call, and it cost us the game, but it wasn't, like, egregious. It didn't come off like sour grapes.
Well, and a lot of it was, we know they have a tough job.
Exactly. And so I just thought it was a very mature way and a very honest way of dealing with it without going over the top.
December's an expensive month. You don't need to slap a fine on top of it for criticizing officials.
It was a frustrating way to end the game. That there's no doubt about that. The Weidman effect, please spare me.
You know what's I'm gonna draw a little parallel here.
I don't even want you to because we're giving the too much cream.
No, I'm just like, because as you mentioned, I'm from Grand Prairie. I'm in a group chat with a bunch of friends back home, and they are Oilers fans, and every single game it feels like that group text lights up about how the officials are against the Oilers. Every team in the NHL, all 32 fan bases, feel like the officials are out to get them. That's where I'll leave it.
The Weidman effect, I don't believe ever did exist.
No.
And I certainly do not believe it exists now. I'm not saying that, like, feel free to believe what you like. I just do not think that ever was a thing. All that being said, I like the way Ryan Huska and the team handled it post-game. I don't mind them being emotional and upset. I don't mind Huberto barking at the official. I don't mind Rasmus Anderson smacking his stick on the boards. I don't mind them waiting. Like, I don't. That was a emotional end and a missed call that led to. But what I like is that they also said, yeah, you know what? We got to move on. They happen. They weren't jobbed. This wasn't a conspiracy theory. It was a missed call that cost the Flames the game. You know what? It'll happen to Ottawa down the road. It happens to every team. And somebody made a really good point on the phone lines on Thursday night. I do think with how many close games the Flames are in, there's going to be more frustrating calls that feel like they... Or non-calls, because there was the call on Kadri, right? The call on Kadri in the Winnipeg game. People were furious about that about a month and a half ago. And this one was a non-call on Huberto. I do think when you're a team that where the margin is so razor thin, you put yourself in a spot where those calls get magnified and amplified, or non-calls get magnified and amplified a whole lot more, and thus the temperature on it feels a little bit higher. And I think that inevitably, as a group of fans or as a fan, you might feel like more of those calls end up costing you games or affecting games than teams that don't play in as many close games. I think there's something to that, too.
Yeah, I'll agree with that theory for sure.
Wolf against Chicago, is that where you go?
Yeah. And just like the conversation Thursday about Vladar getting the start and not Wolf, wouldn't necessarily surprise me either way, but I go back to Wolf in this one.
I just, for the same reason I thought going to Vladar was the right move against Ottawa, I think you got to go to Wolf against Chicago. You don't want either guy to go too long between starts. And here's an opportunity for Dustin Wolf, who's got the best home stats in the NHL, come right back in, continue that, and hopefully the team picks up a win going into the Christmas break. I thought Vladar was the right call to start against Ottawa, and I also thought he answered the bell. Going up against the hottest goaltender in the NHL, and Linus Allmark's now won his last 7 starts and has allowed 2 or fewer goals in all 7 of them. I thought Dan Vladar bounced back very nicely from the Tampa game. Week between starts, he had to stew on that 8-on-26 for the entire time. He gets back in there, and I thought he was one of Calgary's better players. I thought he was strong. None of the goals are on him. I mean, he even, on the last 2 goals, he made great stops on the initial shots on 10 bell chances, but there was nobody there to help with the rebound. Ridley Gregg on the shorthanded break scores on the rebound, and then the overtime winner. He makes a great stop on Stützle, and then Stützle out battles and makes a great play to pass it across to Brady Tkachuk, and there's no chance. So I thought Dan Vladar played very well.
And even the Cousins goal was a shot from the point that gets blocked in traffic and falls to Cousins, who shoots through a screen when you're still trying to figure out where the puck is. So that's not quite a rebound opportunity, but for all intents and purposes, is kind of a rebound opportunity. So when I suggest, yeah, I would lean Wolf, it's not an indictment at all on what Dan Vladar gave the Flames Thursday night.
Yeah, and I'm going to Wolf not because Vladar had a poor game, but because the exact same reason. It's a tandem. Both guys have got to play. Wolf played well his last game. They made the right call going to Vladar against Ottawa, and now you go back to the other guy and make it 17-17 going into the Christmas break. I'd be shocked if anybody other than Dustin Wolf leads the team onto the ice for Saturday's game against Chicago, an opportunity for the Flames to go into the Christmas break on a winning note. He's Vickers. I'm Steinberg. Flames Talk this hour is underway. It's coming at you from our ground. Works downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it's time for our daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, it's Aaron Vickers, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our daily Flames Roundtable, our final Daily Flames Roundtable before Christmas. We're not back until a week from today on December 27th. That's when we're back with regular Flames Talk programming. Gents, let's start by talking about Jacob Pelche, who's been up on recall for the last little bit and has I think, really started to settle in nicely since the recall. He was healthy scratched 1 game, but now has 7 games under his belt up with the Flames. When we spoke about him being recalled, we talked a lot about, hey, this might be his last opportunity to prove to the organization that he's a full-time NHLer. And we didn't know if he was a full-time NHLer. And by no means am I suggesting we have a definitive answer yet, but you know, how far has your opinion moved on Jacob Pelche, his ability to be in this league full-time, and the rest of the season for him with what he's done on this recall?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not prepared to sit here and say that I think he is going to be a full-time NHLer moving forward. I will sit here and say that I think he has played well since being recalled from the Calgary Wranglers, and I'm happy the Flames were able to keep him in the organization when they put him on waivers earlier this season. I thought there was a really good chance he would get claimed by another team as a former first-round pick who, you know, hasn't yet panned out, but has some built-in excuses with the injuries that he's had to deal with and I just wasn't ready to give up on Jacob Pelche, but the Flames had a tough decision to make. They rolled the dice and put him on waivers and probably did so at the right time. And I'm guessing it was a calculated risk that they took when they put Jacob Pelche on waivers back in October. And you know, thankfully he was able to go down to the AHL, play well. He was almost a point of game player there, earned a recall when there were plenty of options for the Flames. It's not like they're like, oh, geez, who are we going to call up here? We don't have anybody, so let's just go with Jacob Pelche. No, they had plenty of guys that they could have recalled, and they decided to go with him. And I think he's been effective playing in a bottom six role and a penalty-killing role, which I think has been huge for him. Anytime you can use a third- or a fourth-line player who isn't playing as much at five-on-five on one or both sides, generally speaking, one side of special teams, that's a win. So I think Pelche has been good. He's trending in the right direction, but this is an everyday league, as we've heard from so many managers, coaches, and players over the years. And now he's got to keep doing it night in, night out. And I would use Walker Duehr as an example. I loved Walker Duehr when he first got recalled, and I think his play's dropped off quite a bit now in a fourth line role. So for both of those guys, if they want to stay, then they're going to have to earn that opportunity, because if they don't, then there are plenty of players, whether it be Andre Kuzmenko with the big club or guys who are having really good seasons with the Calgary Wranglers, who would love to have that opportunity at this level.
I've quite liked and appreciated Jacob Pelche through the seven games that he's played with the Flames this season. And I'm sort of with Wilsey here, where I'm not ready to declare him a full-time NHLer for the next 5 years or anything, but I'm a lot more confident today than I was 3 weeks ago that Pelletier could be a regular NHLer again. And he's just doing a lot of the things that we didn't see from him last season, and understandably so. Shoulder injury in an exhibition game in training camp knocks him out for multiple months, comes back and doesn't get a whole lot of time before sustaining another shoulder injury. And I can understand why Jacob Pelche didn't look like the Pelche that we knew based on the injury history and trouble. And then even coming into training camp, it was like, oh, he still doesn't look like the Pelche that we know and love, for lack of a better term, with his aggressiveness, with his puck pursuit, with a little bit of offensive flair mixed in, his skating ability, his tenacity. We didn't see that, at least I didn't see that, all throughout training camp, where it got to the point where Calgary's going to have to make a decision. There's a reasonable chance that if they pick waivers, he might no longer be in the organization. Now, lo and behold, nobody submitted a claim on him, which I think might have been a pretty significant eye-opener as well for him. But he handled the assignment in the AHL, and it was the right call. You needed to get him playing. It wasn't a situation where you could protect him as a 13th or 14th forward on the NHL roster and hope to work it out of him in practice. He needed to get back into game situations in order to refine his game and refine his confidence. And the things I've seen in the seven games, I mean, one goal and two assists for 3 points in seven games is great production for what you're looking out of Pelche, but it's the skating ability, it's the tenacity, it's bumping defensemen on forechecks and getting into lanes and all those sorts of things. And again, he's made a couple of plays a game where you're like, ooh, that's a pretty interesting wrinkle to add to Pelche. So am I ready to declare him a full-time NHLer where he's going to spend the next 4 or 5 seasons playing 82 games? No. But I'm infinitely more confident that he can than, you know, going back 3 months to training camp.
And that's, guys, why I asked the question, like, how far have you moved? Not asking
significantly.
You, not asking you if you have a definitive answer, but like, how far have you moved? And so I've moved quite a bit. I wasn't sure what to expect. I wasn't sure if Jacob was going to be able to make an impact playing on the fourth line. And I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to hold his own playing in the middle six. And in both cases, he's done so. So to answer my own question, I've moved quite significantly. And look, I've always been a believer in that. I think that there is something there. I think his speed, I think his energy, I think his two-way play, I think his tenacity. Like, I've always felt like there's an NHL player here, but I was starting to wonder prior to this and how the last year and a bit has gone for him, I was starting to wonder if it was going to happen in a Flames uniform. Well, I give him a lot of credit. He goes through waivers. Vix, I think you're right. It was a significant, in fact, I know it was a significant eye-opener for him. He goes down, clears through waivers, and we've asked Trent Cole, the head coach of the Wranglers, multiple times about the attitude that he
came into Wranglers camp with, and it was nothing but good. And he joined the Wranglers, and he was ready to get back to playing hockey, get his confidence back, play the way that he knows how, and he has. He was almost a point-per-game guy with the Wranglers, gets recalled to the Flames, and immediately he looked like a guy who was doing the things from a number of years ago when people in this city became really big believers in him. He was playing with energy. He was winning battles. He was playing with tenacity, and we've seen that from him, guys, in a fourth line role, and we've seen him do that in this role playing beside Connor Zary in a more elevated situation. So, and then the other part that I think is really important is the penalty kill, and he's done quite well. Now, it's a small sample size. I know they put a version of this graphic up on the Sportsnet telecast on Thursday during the Senators game, and now with updated minutes, this is Jacob Pelche's, the way things have gone for him playing on the penalty kill. He's played just over 8 minutes of PK time in the last seven games. In that penalty kill time, opposing teams have only gotten three shots on goal, one high danger scoring chance, and he has not been on the ice for a goal against killing penalties. Now, that's not solely due to him. Of course not. PK, that's a group effort of the four guys out there. But when he's been out there killing penalties, the Flames have done a nice job. And by the eye, I think he's been a pretty effective penalty killer. It's been him and Blake Coleman who have been working as a duo on that Flames PK unit. They're the second or third forward group on that PK unit. So I've come a long way, guys. I am far more optimistic now than I was a couple weeks ago that Pelche can stick for the rest of the season. Right now, I'm feeling pretty optimistic that indeed he can.
Yeah, for me, during training camp, he looked like a guy who lacked confidence and a guy who was thinking too much on the ice and maybe trying too hard, as strange as that might sound. And I think getting sent down to the AHL was a wake-up call for him. Would be an opportunity to rebuild his confidence, which I'm sure he did, putting up almost a point a game, and also to figure out who he is as a professional hockey player. And quite often when a guy is taken in the first round, expectations are too high. I mean, if you're a top five or a top 10 pick, that's one thing. But when you're taken in the 20s, maybe people shouldn't expect you to turn into a high-end scorer or a top six guy. And I remember when we talked about Jacob Pelche when he first got recalled, I said something along the lines of, I don't know if Jacob Pelche is ever going to be a regular top six guy in this league or if he's going to put up big goal and point totals. But what I do think he can be, or at least wonder if he can be, is a high-end checker who gives you some offense. And after watching Jacob Pelche during his latest recall, I actually think that, you know, he's still a young developing player and that he can turn into that type of player. And the fact that he's been used and has been effective on the penalty kill in more of a checking role, and I think that that can bleed into your five-on-five game in positive ways as well, really leads me to believe that he can become that type of player. And I think there's enough offense in there where, maybe not this season, but down the road, he could put up 30 or 40 or maybe even 50 points once in a while. So, yeah, I still think there's a lot to like with Jacob Pelche. I would say so far so good with his latest recall, and now we'll see if he can be consistent in the role that he's been playing. And if he is, then I think it's going to be hard to send him back down again.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Friday. And for the second time this season, the Chicago Blackhawks will make their way through the Scotiabank Saddledome on Saturday afternoon, led by, of course, former first overall selection Connor Bedard, the 2023 first overall pick, who is now in his sophomore season. 7 goals, 26 points in 33 games, which is down on pace from his rookie season with the Blackhawks, where he had 61 in 68. Guys, what were you expecting from Connor Bedard in his sophomore season? And is what he's done so far at, below, or above those expectations?
I was expecting a little bit more. But with that said, it's a hard league. And there is such thing as a sophomore slump. And it's not necessarily all on the individual. I think part of it is. But once the league's seen you and can pre-scout you a little bit better and understands your strengths and your weaknesses, I think it gets tougher. I really do. So, you know, Connor Bedard, in his first game at Scotiabank Saddledome, made some plays that, like, were just jaw-dropping. I mean, the guy's got incredible vision. He's got super high-end skill, and he's going to be a great player in this league for a long time to come. But it's a hard league, and I think he is finding that out, and things are maybe a little bit more difficult for him in his second season than they were in his first. And the reason I thought he was going to take a jump this year isn't necessarily because I thought he was going to take a massive step as far as his development as an NHL player. It was more about the players who he had surrounding him. Last year, the Blackhawks looked a lot like the Rockford IceHogs. I mean, their roster was really thin, so he didn't have a lot of support around him. This year, during the offseason, they went out and spent a lot of money in free agency, and I don't have the number in front of me, but I remember talking about it in the first game between the Flames and the Blackhawks. You know, they brought a lot of experience in. They brought a lot of talent in. I thought the Blackhawks were going to be a lot better team, and that hasn't been the case. And, you know, he's playing with a couple of good players, but I wouldn't say that he's playing with a couple of really good or great players. So I was expecting a little bit more from Connor Bedard, but hey, we're not even halfway through the season, and the league is well aware of who he is and what he can do, and I'm sure there have been adjustments made by the other 31 NHL teams, but hey, he's still a player. He can still take a game over, so the Flames are certainly going to have to key on him on Saturday afternoon.
I expected a lot more out of Connor Bedard in his sophomore year. And again, Wilsey, you pointed out there's still a lot of runway left this season. Last year, he only played 68 games, 22 goals, 61 points. So over an 82-game schedule, that would be 26.5 goals, 73.5 points. I expected Connor Bedard to be flirting with a point per game, if not in that 85 to 90-point range. Right now, he's on pace for 17 goals over an 82-game schedule. And I do agree, Wilsey. Sophomore slump is a real thing. The opposition figures you out. But also, Connor Bedard has had a year to figure out the NHL as well. He's had that experience of knowing what to expect day in, day out, the grind that the schedule can be, what works and what doesn't work against NHL defensemen. So when you're a generational type talent that Connor Bedard is, I think it's fair to expect not necessarily, it doesn't have to be significant growth, because if we're talking going from 74 points over an 82-game schedule to 85, that's not a massive spike in production. But I do think it would have been fair to expect Bedard to be further along in terms of, and not everything comes down to goals, assists, points in terms of development. But when you're the player that's under the microscope that has had the history through pre-junior, when his days at West Van Academy, to being with the Regina Pats, to being the number one pick in his draft year about 5 years prior to it happening, there is a lot of expectation put on you. And from at least a production standpoint, I expected more growth out of Bedard year over year. Again, lots of runway left in this season. He's still got 49 games to go, but through 33, I expected more than 7 goals, 19 assists for 26 points.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I am, like, well below expectations. I was expecting, and maybe this was naive of me, but, you know, watching Bedard play and seeing him be such a volume shooter last year and the things he's capable of doing, and maybe I gave too much, or maybe I didn't give enough credit to how poor the Hawks are around him, but I was expecting Connor Bedard to go from flirting with a point per game like he was last year to crushing a point per game. Like, I was expecting Connor Bedard to be on pace for something that starts with a 9 at the, like, 90 plus points. That's kind of where I honestly, like, you go take a look at the last generational player that we've seen in the league. And I think that Connor McDavid among generational players is right at the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
But Bedard's the first guy since McDavid. And McDavid went from 48 and 45 in his rookie year, where he got cut short by the broken collarbone, and jumped from that to 100 points in his second year. He went to being a triple-digit player in his second year in the NHL and has been a well over point-per-game player since. And I don't think the Oilers teams, I mean, you know, that second-year Oilers team where they made the playoffs did have a guy named Draisaitl on it. So there's no Draisaitl on the Blackhawks right now. I will grant you that. But, I mean, I still thought Bedard was going to take a significant jump in his overall point totals, his overall impact, because that's what generational players typically do. The same thing happened with Crosby. And that's who we're talking about Bedard being in the same mix with. So, yeah, well below expectations, guys. And I still am confident he's going to get there. I think he's going to be a 90-plus point player in this league at some point, and maybe not in his second year, but... yeah, that's kind of just based on his pedigree, based on some of the incredible things I saw from him last year, based on his skill set, all that type of stuff. I was expecting a much larger jump, and I definitely wasn't expecting a big step back, because I feel like players like Bedard, you know, these are the guys that are supposed to be immune to that quote-unquote sophomore slump, because as Vic said, like that... he's had a year to figure out the NHL. Usually you feel like, okay, well, watch out. Now that he's got a year to figure out the NHL, now where's it going to go? And it just hasn't gone that way, which I'm quite surprised by.
Well, guys, I know you would agree with what I'm about to say, that there is no Leon Draisaitl on the Blackhawks. There is no other superstar to play with or to maybe take some of the attention away from the biggest star on the team, like Connor McDavid had. Where would you slot, if you're a head coach, where would you slot Nick Foligno?
I don't know. Like on a...
not on your first line.
No, for
where
sure
where would you
not.
Slot Ryan Donato?
Yeah.
Not on your first line. Those are his wingers. So with all due respect to those two guys, like I said earlier, they're both good players. But ideally, are they playing on left and right wing with your generational guy, Connor Bedard? No. Now, I'm not saying it's not partly on him that he hasn't been as successful or as productive in his second season as I think we all thought he would be, but there's only so much you can do by yourself.
Yeah. Well, curious to see how the rest of the season goes. I am excited to see him in the Dome on Saturday afternoon. I'll say that much. It's always fun to watch number 98 play, but yeah, I'm a little underwhelmed by what we've seen in year two in the NHL. That is a note the start time. 2 p.m. face-off at the Dome to wrap up the Flames' pre-Christmas schedule. We'll be on the air at 1 on Saturday afternoon with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Until then, Willsy, have a wonderful rest of your Friday. Thank you, pal.
Well, I hope that Connor Bedard's not listening to Flames talk, because you just motivated him for tomorrow's game against the Flames. So hopefully he's maybe out doing some Christmas shopping or something. But Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Flames Talk, and hope you enjoy the holidays, and hopefully the Flames head in with a win.
And I'd have a lot of questions if Connor Bedard was listening to Flames Talk.
I think he's hit like and subscribe.
A lot of podcast downloads, you know. Could be one of them.
I can't definitively say he's not one of the downloads.
Right?
I can't, but yeah. I just doubt it. That's all. Bye, Wills. Okay. See you at the Dome on Saturday. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. There's your Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. As we start to wrap things up this hour on the program, thanks to Santa Shan and Little Elf Cam.
That's how you decided to do it?
I just... yeah, Mr. Claus over there? Shanta Claus?
Yeah, Shanta. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That was my name for like my entire life. Like Shanta that. Claus in December.
I thought I just came up with that on my own.
Like, I kind of want to chirp his ugly Christmas sweater, but I respect it at the same time.
That's a 10 out of 10. Barbie ugly Christmas sweater, 10 out of 10. Yeah, and then we got Cam, our little elf. Are you okay with that, Cam? Is that not a fan?
I just don't like the idea of working for Shan.
Well, that's a fair point. Oh. I didn't even think about that. You're the head elf, though. Like, you get a lot of say.
Do I get benefits?
You're Shanta's elf.
You're going to have to strike.
Big benefits. That'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.